Okay, we are recording. This is Jen Brown. I am here in Corpus Christi, Texas. It's July 15th, 2022, and I'm here to do an oral history for the Baffin Bay Oral History Project. Can I get you to pronounce your name just so it's correct for the record?
Okay, it's Warren. My middle initial is B, but I go by the name of Bo Kratz, Kratz. It's a good old German name.
Okay, that's what I thought. So for the record, do I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Since this is an oral history, we'd like to start kind of at the beginning. Can you tell me more about your background and early life?
Well, I grew up in the Midwest and we lived on the Mississippi. And every boy, young man or young women for that matter, had access to a lot of streams and rivers around the Mississippi, and we lived right on the Mississippi, so we fishing was very available, and a lot of boys did it. So we did it with their dads, initially, like I did with my dad. He was a big fly fisherman, and he introduced me to fishing at a very young age.
And where was this at?
This was in Burlington, Iowa. It's down in the southeastern corner of Iowa. It's the town's still about the same size it was when I lived there, about 30 to 35,000. So it's a typical Iowa small town.
Okay. And growing up fishing, can you tell me more about that?
What that was like?
Yeah.
Well, getting up early in the morning with my dad, which was special that I had him all to myself, which is always good. But we started out fishing for bluegill and crappie and something that was more my size. But of course, he fished for bass and even trout and stuff in northern parts of Iowa. But it was always exciting to get up early in the morning before anybody else was up, and that was a part of the thing that I enjoyed about it.
You can keep going.
And he had a my dad had a plaque, which was on the door to the basement, which I memorized because it was always right there when I was eating. I could see it, and it was. My dad said it was from the Bible. He said, "You can find this in the Bible. I think it's in Leviticus." He said, "This is what it said: Behold the fisherman. He riseth up early in the morning, yea, he disturbeth the whole household. Mighty are his preparations. He goeth forth full of hope. And when the day is far spent, he returneth, smelling of strong drink. And the truth is not in him."
Did you ever
Which is
find
not which is
that
not in the Bible, but it was a good story.
So, what happened after you got older?
When I got older, well, my dad died at a very young age. He was just 50 years old. So I was 15. And so I was kind of largely on my own as far as fishing, and he left me with a lot of fishing equipment and two or three boats, and I really kind of started doing everything on my own, and had friends and we buddies in high school and stuff. We fished together and everything. That's what we did, got in a little bit of trouble, which makes it interesting, but. I still maintain contact with those guys today. They're still high school buddies. We get together and turkey hunt and do things together.
And you mentioned you went to University of Missouri.
In Columbia, Missouri, I majored in wildlife conservation and that for 2 years, but then I found it a little bit too demanding academically for a farm boy from Iowa. So I changed my major to business because I just couldn't take the zoology courses. There were just nine zoology courses, and most of them I couldn't even pronounce. But I thought I wanted to be a game biologist. I wanted to study and estuaries and rivers and everything, and come up with viable working plans for maintenance of the same. And but I didn't go that direction.
So how do you get from a Midwestern fisher to down on the coast and a saltwater fisherman?
Well, that's interesting, because when I came down here, I brought a lot of freshwater lures, because as you know, bass fishing, you didn't use, well, you could use, but most people fish with lures. So I brought down a whole box of all kinds of fishing lures, and when I met people down here who fished in saltwater, they say, oh, those will never work. Those will never work down here. Those are freshwater lures. Freshwater lures. And they were totally wrong, because I used lures that worked up there, and I started using them in the Laguna Madre when I met a guy who had a boat. Once you meet a guy who has a boat, it changes your whole life. And then you have to have one, and it's changed even further, and then you might even be single. But normally, if you have a good wife, she'll stay with you when you buy a boat.
So when did you first come down here?
1964, something like that, about 1964.
And what brought you down here?
I came down here to go to school at a school that was called Texas A&I back then. It's now Texas A&M Corpus Kingsville. And came down here to go to school down here because my parents had moved down to the valley. They played golf, and they wanted to play golf year-round. So you can do that in the valley of Texas. So that's what brought me down here.
Okay. And so you went to, what was Kingsville like back then?
Kingsville was a very nice small town, a college town, and a lot of good people. And I joined a fraternity and met some guys who had lived down here a while, and they were big fishermen and hunters and stuff. And I, of course, fit right in with them, and met a guy named James Foster, who had a boat, and we fished. That's who I started fishing Baffin Bay with. He had a great big 20-foot boat. Had like a 150 horsepower motor. Can you imagine?
So that was big for the 60s.
Yeah, that was big. That was a big boat. So, and that was a Baffin Bay boat. Baffin Bay was always known as a potentially rough water. It can get really rough out there. And you needed a little bit larger boat if you're going to fish a lot in Baffin Bay. Of course, now they use shallow running boats, and they run them back in the shallows, where we were always running down the channel, the Williams Channel, right down the middle of Baffin Bay, which is wide open water.
Mm-hmm. So do you remember the first time you fished Baffin Bay?
Not really. Back in those days, we fished with shrimp. We used live shrimp under a popping cork. It was pretty much the staple way of fishing, and we caught fish like a lot of the guys that you've interviewed that are older. You caught fish by the hundreds, and there were no limits, and there was no size limit, there was no number limit, and but there were so many fish, we thought, oh, they'll never establish a limit on fish size or number. They'll never do that, because the trout are just so numerous. That'll never happen. We were wrong. And there were big fish as well, a lot of big fish in Baffin, which is the mystique of Baffin Bay anyway, is big trout. That's the whole story behind Baffin Bay.
That kind of gets to my next question, was what do you think makes Baffin Bay special?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I tried to find a map, or chart rather, an old chart. It looks something like this, that I probably got 30 years ago. And on that chart of Baffin Bay, which is what we looked at, because we didn't have electronics like you have now, we had charts that were pretty accurate. And on that chart, there was a little asterisk in the middle of one of the pages. And it said, beware, there are many uncharted rocks, rock formations, and underwater impediments in Baffin Bay. In other words, you leave the channel, you're on your own. And you better know where you're going, because there still are lots of rocks in Baffin Bay, but they're not, technically, you know, they're not rocks. But that's what we called them, was rocks. But the fishing was very good, as long as you knew where you were going. We bounced off a few rocks in the process. By props. We tore up props. So that's how you learn Baffin Bay back in those days. But anyway, those charts looked like this, and then they moved upward into these charts that had a little, they were more colorful, and they had little fish marked on them, which would show you, if you didn't know where to go, would show you the depth of the water, and it would have occasionally there'd be a good fishing spot, and it would mark it I'm not going to break this whole thing open here, but mark with a little red fish on it. And so that was kind of helpful. That was pretty, you see the little fish markings here and up in here? Those are places where somebody put these charts together. And it was really helpful, and helped us learn Baffin Bay without tearing up too much equipment.
So what does Baffin Bay mean to you?
Baffin Bay means, to me, means big trout. Yeah. People have come from all over the country to fish Baffin Bay for a big spotted or sea trout, or what they call them. Speckled trout, we call them, or specks. That was the mystique of Baffin Bay, is big trout. That's what people came down here to do. And we used large lures for big trout. I'm sure some of the people you've interviewed have probably told you about the broken backs and the big floaters, super spooks and stuff like that that you used, because big trout were drawn to big baits. The theory is big bait, big trout. No, but that's not necessarily always true, but that's what we fish with a lot, with something to catch a big trout.
How big are we talking to catch these big trout?
How many what?
How big, like what size?
Well, back in those days, a big trout would be around 30, 28 to 30 inches long. That was a big trout. And the state record was held by Mike Blackwood. You might have heard his name, and I know Mike. It was held for many, many, many years. I can't remember what the dimensions were on that trout, but that's the thing about Baffin Bay. You go down there to catch a big trout. Now, it's kind of a neat feeling to get out early in the morning for the light is coming up on the east, hardly, and you're getting out of your boat to wade fish, which is all we did, was wade fish. And when you get out of your boat and it's still dark, and you wade off into what you think is the right area, and throwing those big baits and just waiting for one of those big sow trout to come up there. You know, they're all females, and we called them big girls, to wait for a big girl to come up. some women might take offense to that. I don't know.
Well, if they are female,
no offense was intended.
Can you talk more about the tackle you used and the type of fishing that you did and how that's changed over time?
I used spinning because that's what we used in the Midwest. And then after a few years, I switched over to bait casters and something. You're able to handle larger fish a little bit better with a bait caster than at least I can than rather than to use a spin reel. But the spin rod, spin reel combination is easy for a beginner to use. So consequently, a lot of people started out with that, because you have fewer backlashes and it's really pretty simple. And that way you can introduce it to children and stuff, and they can learn how to cast. And that's what I did with my son. And that's where we met a lot of people and did a lot of fishing together.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me more about some of these big fish? And
no, the... I can't tell you because it's a secret. Now, some of the people that you have interviewed, and you've mentioned some of the names, now those guys caught a lot of big trout. But I, like I say, I was just a beginner, and we caught quite a few big trout. I just remember the excitement we'd have when somebody would catch a big trout. We knew we were in the right area, you know, because they you don't catch just one sometimes. If you have three or four guys and you're wade fishing, you know, it kind of picks the excitement up. But we caught a lot of big trout on brokenbacks, cotton cordell brokenbacks, which was a black and chrome. It looks like a great big mullet, I think. And trout just come up and crush those things and take it down. And they had two big treble hooks, so it really it was hard for them to shake it once they hit it. But I caught a lot of big trout. But it doesn't matter that much to me anymore. It's a big trout thing. Yeah, I get excited when I catch one, but I'm not targeting big trout. I target the experience. I enjoy fishing more than just looking for a big trout. Numbers of trout is always fun.
What do you think your most memorable experience about Baffin Bay is?
Most memorable... I would say being on the south side of Baffin and a front came in, which we didn't anticipate, and the water got really, really rough. We had to put on life jackets, and I thought, this could be life-threatening, getting back down. We were down on Los Corrales, which is kind of the middle of Baffin Bay, and we had to come out to the east and back to the north. To get out of Baffin, and I had a 20-foot boat, but it wasn't big enough that day, and we took a lot of water over the bow, and it was pretty scary. So I gained a lot of respect for Baffin Bay that day. But we got out, obviously, and didn't lose the boat or any of its participants. So
successful.
Successful trip when everybody gets home and nothing's broken.
Can you talk about the changes that you've noticed to Baffin Bay over time?
Well, just the pressure that Baffin Bay is under. Like I said, when I first started fishing, Baffin Bay was considered a sanctuary where few would go into. You had to be very careful as you moved around. There's a lot of rocks, and maybe you don't even want to go there because if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to get in trouble. So consequently, myself and a lot of people, we kind of shied away from Baffin Bay. We would only go in a little ways, and we didn't try too many places because we respected it a lot. And but as you get a little more confident, you start. But now you have guys that run these shallow running boats, and they run right across these bars and stuff that we used to always had to maneuver around. But they still tear up some equipment, but. There's just a lot more pressure. There's a lot more people fishing. There's a lot more guides. There's a lot more fishing tournaments, which creates a lot of people on the water. But it introduces people to fishing, which is a good thing, good for the state and good. That's the principal difference, I would say. And there's a little bit of difference in the quality of Baffin's water. We noticed that the grasses were not as thick. From the time we started, we used to walk in along edges of very thick, lush grass. And I was just down there the other day, and we waded for a long ways and couldn't find hardly any grass anywhere. And that kind of makes me wonder if maybe the water quality has dropped to a very low ebb. And I'm glad it looks like they're doing some things about it. And then some people won't agree with me, but the introduction of croaker fishing is, I'm a plastic guy. I use artificial. I feel like the main reason a guy goes fishing is to use deception to get a fish to hit. And that's, you make something, or you make a lure, or you buy a lure that looks like a fish, but you don't throw a croaker out in front of them because they can't take it. It's like candy. It's candy for a baby. They're going to take it. So that's not really deceptive for me. I like it when I fool a fish into hitting my offering when it's not real. And that gives me greater satisfaction than using a shrimp or a croaker. But there's a lot of guides that use croaker, and they catch an awful lot of fish. And I'm glad the limits are down to 3, and as far as being in the slot and everything, only 3. And I think that's going to help. As far as I'm concerned, big fish should all be released. Anything over whatever the state would require, a good-sized fish should be released, carefully released. Yeah.
What about in terms of changes to the fish or crabs and shrimp? Have you noticed anything in that regard?
No, I couldn't say that I have, but like I say, I haven't done any science, and I'm sure that the Parks and Wildlife has done a lot of science in that, because it all is a part of the ecosystem, as we know. The crabs are just as important to Baffin Bay as drum, as trout, as flounder, and they're all important in that system. And if you neglect one, you do that to the detriment of the others involved.
Some people have mentioned the freezes in the past and some of the other events mm-hmm. as changing the bay. Mm-hmm. Did you experience any of that?
Oh, absolutely. We had some very strong freezes. This more recent one that we've had didn't compare to the ones we had, like in 89. We had one in 83, where on the south side of Baffin Bay, there was a white line on the south side of Baffin Bay. As you, from a distance, you could see it. It looked like foam, but what it was dead fish stacked up on the south side of Baffin Bay. And after the freeze of 89, I did not catch a trout for 2 years, and we were trying to find a trout to see if there was any, but they slowly came back. You could catch redfish. Redfish are tough; they can handle it. They come back really quickly, but those freezes were just devastating. This most recent one we had appears to have not been as bad as maybe what some of them predicted, because it seems to be recovering very quickly, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. What do you think success looks like in terms of current efforts to restore and conserve Baffin Bay?
What success would look like?
Yeah.
I think it would be successful if maybe I shouldn't say it, but I'd like to see fewer guides on the water. Maybe limit the number of guides who can fish in a particular ecosystem or estuary. You can only have so many because they kind of dominate, and it's for the state of Texas and for recreational fishermen as well. But without really planning to dominate, they do, just by their presence. And they, I wouldn't argue with a guy who's trying to make a living, you know. And guiding is, I think we had, one time it was close to 400 guides in the Laguna Madre between here and all the way up to toward Sea Drift and all that area, and back down toward Mansfield. And that's an awful lot of pressure on those fish every day. Some of these guides, out of 365 days, they may be out on the water as many as 300 days a year and taking clients. And that's a lot of pressure on a fishery, a lot of pressure on the trout. to handle that kind of effort that they put in. I think something needs to be done to kind of bring that down to a more reasonable level. And I think that would help the overall life of the fishery for the future generations. And we've got a lot of young boys and girls that are fishing now, which the pandemic really helped, because people were tired of being in the house. And they bought boats and they took the kids fishing, and I see a lot of that on the water. And I think that's very healthy. But the day after day of catching a limited trout for you and your customers, and they know how to do it. They're professionals. So they're very effective at it. So they take large numbers of fish.
That kind of gets me to my next question, is how do you think we can get younger generations to want to be stewards of Baffin Bay?
Well, I think steward is a great word, because we have been given that responsibility from the beginning, from Adam and Eve. Adam was asked to, God said, you're going to be a steward of this. I'm going to give this to you, but you're going to be responsible for it. And I think to get young people involved in it, I think you could have something in the elementary schools where you could teach outdoor stuff, camping, fishing, doing what you're doing, kayaking, that sort of thing will introduce people to being out on the water. And it's such a healthy environment. And tell them to leave their electronics at home, except for what's on the screen that gives them an idea of where they're going in GPS system and all that. But I contend that every young boy, and I'm seeing young girls as well, I see every young boy and a lot of young girls at a certain age want to go fishing, whether their dad fishes or not, whether their mother fishes or not, they have a curiosity for it, and they want to go. And if you can take them at that time and introduce them to it, it's a lifelong thrill for them. I just see a lot of kids that go out and they can't think of anything better than to go fishing. And of course, like I said earlier, it's kind of like being with your dad or your uncle or everything. It's a very bonding sort of thing. It's a very great place to, and you talk about things out fishing that you don't have time when you're at home. You know, you get out with your dad or another and buddies and everything. You have time to talk about it, and you get to see the sun come up and thank God for it.
You mentioned bringing your son out. Can you tell me more about teaching your kids how to fish?
I would say that he just, I have a son, and my daughter's coming down Monday to fish with me. She's 50, I think, something like that. I never thought I'd see the day that she'd want to go fishing with me, but now, the last few years, she comes down and she has a great time. We fish in the boat, and she just has a blast, and I never thought that would happen. And my wife's going too, so it's an estrogen imbalance, but... It'll be three of us on the boat, and I'll be running around like a chicken trying to keep everything in order as they're trying to take my hat off with every cast. But I introduced my son to fishing, bought him a small rod that he could easily handle, so he's not frustrated. And that's one thing with kids, you got to give them something that's, don't give them big equipment and ask him to do too much. You teach him to go out and catch a pin perch. We do that at our church. We have what we call Kids Fish Day, and little kids come out, and we have these little short reels that looks like something you'd ice fish with, and we put a little piece of shrimp on it, a little tiny hook, and we go down to the T-heads, and we fish off the edge. We throw a little piece of shrimp out there to get the pin perch coming up in there, and they just drop a line, and they just have a blast pulling those pin perch out one after another. But that's an easy way to start them at a very early age. And plenty of snacks. If you got plenty of snacks, they'll be happy.
You've clearly done this before. I wanted to also ask you a little bit more. Seems like your conservation ethics really connected to your religion. You know, you're talking about being a steward of the environment.
Yes, yes.
Can you tell me more about that and how that evolved?
Well, I guess I have a sense of where things were when I was younger to where they are now. And are we doing, I'm asking myself, was I a part of doing a better job of taking care of things? I haven't been actively involved in being a part of that, except I've just been observation of a few things, such as we used to have trout lines up and down the King Ranch shoreline, which ran all the way out, and it was commercial fishing for trout and drum and redfish, and they took, you know, a tremendous amount of fish out of the Laguna Madre, but surprisingly enough, it could handle it, but it took a lot to get that stopped. But when they finally got that cleared up, where you could run down the shoreline without running into a trout line that would hit you in the neck if you weren't watching. It would,
oh, really?
And had hooks on it. If you were running in the dark or you weren't watching where you were going, you could run into a elevated trout line, which is just barely above the water, and dangling these baits down, you run into it. Being a good steward, I think, means to only take the fish that you need. Don't take a whole cooler full of fish, or even try to put a bunch of fish in your freezer, which end up many times being freezer burn and you don't eat them. The best thing to do is to take only the fish that you need and the fish that you intend to eat. And of course, it's really good if you cook them in that same day. That's being a good steward, I think, is realizing that you can impact the fishery, even being just a recreational fisherman. You can have an effect. And when you take people out, you tell them, hey, we're only going to keep, or like David Rousey does, we're not going to keep any fish. We're going to catch, photo, and release. I applaud that. I have a theory, and people say, what did you keep any fish? And I said, no, we're not keeping them right now. We're gonna let them spawn, you know. Oh man, and everybody said, oh yeah, you're crazy. Why don't you take them? Really, we get plenty of fish to eat the rest of the year. But I have a theory that when you take a nice big trout that you could take home and eat, when you release that fish, and you see it swim off, you say to yourself, that was satisfying. That was a reward that I saw that fish swim off. If I ate that fish, it wouldn't be nearly as rewarding, you know. It's good, but it's not as good as watching a fish swim off and knowing that you have released life back into the water. A lot of people don't look at it that way, but that's the way I look at it. It's as big a thrill to do that as it is to eat it, I guarantee you.
I think those were all the questions I had. What did I miss? Do you want to talk about anything else?
Well, I hope that your tribe increases. I hope there's more people who care about the fishery and the history that goes into this area, including Baffin Bay and Laguna Madre. I hope there are more people like you who give a rip about it and want to see that it's maintained properly and being a good steward of it, so that you hear it all the time, future generations, well, how about doing it right now? Make sure that we have the things that we have and we maintain them properly. And I think guys like Scott Murray have been instrumental in trying to educate that. I think guides can be the arm of education. They can go out and they can tell people what's important and how many fish we're going to take and how we're going to fish. Maybe we're just going to go boat riding, and maybe we're just going to take pictures to enjoy the outdoor experience. But anyway, I think guides and game wardens don't have time to educate. Maybe they can go into schools and do some training, I don't know. But But I think the guides are going to be the principal arm of education for the future, because there are many of them, and they meet a lot of people who are novice fishermen, and they can teach them a lot about what's important and what's not. And I hope they'll take advantage of that and not just go for a meat haul. We call it a meat haul, or fill the cooler. You know, it's, that's those days should be long gone. We should never do that again. Have you ever read the, I'm going to give you a book. Have you read this book?
Yeah, not for a long time. But
oh, you want to read it, or now you've read it before?
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah, it's a really neat book.
Hemingway's The Old Man and the Sea, or the audio.
Yeah, Old Man and the Sea. But that's what I am. I'm 78, and my goal is to be able to wade fish baffin in my 80s. I'd like to make it. I still got a few more years on this frame. I'd like to be able to still be able to do that. And I get kind of emotional about it.
I hope you will be able to fish it.
Yeah. Cookie and I are still going out. Of course, he's a human dynamo. He's the ever ready bunny. He just has all this energy, but heck, he's like 64, 65. He's just a kid.
I thought you were younger, actually.
No, I'll be 79 here pretty soon.
Oh, wow.
But thank the Lord for good health, and he's given me some really good years. The Bible says 70, which is 70, is what is kind of a promise. So I've gotten that and more. So it's been good, and fishing's been a big part of it. Really has been a big part of my life. Kind of, if you will, almost defines me in many ways.
How do you mean?
I think most fishermen are gentlemen. Most fishermen should be gentlemen. My dad always taught me it's a privilege to get out and to do that, and it takes skill, and a fish won't respect a sloppy presentation. They only respect and they reward you for, you prepare, you use your equipment well, and you take care of it, and you think about what you're doing, and you plan, probably do more planning than you do when you're working. You know, you plan those trips and stuff. So I think it's a good training for kids and stuff. When you're bringing them up, take care of your equipment, you know, make your bed in the morning, do things like that, you know, that are seemingly silly, but in the end, the reward is good. The benefits are very good. But like I told you before we started the interview, I'm really not a scientist. I'm just an acute observationist. I observe things, and I make my own theories based on that. But most fishermen are good people. And they're the kind of people I like to be around. Even fishing guides. You can edit that out if you want to.
Anything else?
No. Okay. I can't think of anything.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to turn this recorder off.
Okay.